right. Hey, episode 45. Are you serious? Chief Meteorologist Jamie Arnold here.
Meteorologist Andrew Dockery. We are located in Myrtle Beach. I feel like we should say that a little bit
more.
Yeah,
we hadn't done that in a while.
I know, right?
Yeah, who are these guys?
It was a couple episodes ago that we had Kevin tuning in from Pennsylvania. That's cool to see.
I love that.
When we have people in the live chat that are from different states, it's like, oh, wow. I'm trying to think of what else we've had lately, a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, you're in Texas right now.
I'm in Texas right now. A little pre-recorded magic here.
But what's beautiful about this is we've actually planned like a whole new show for you to kind of suffice. But next week, we're going to be talking about
everything. What I'm currently seeing in Texas.
Correct. If you're in the chat, you're in Texas.
Yeah.
But yeah, welcome in. This is a brand new episode here for you. I'm really excited about this because we're going to get to dive in. If there's a weather that I enjoy, this is it. Like, I love hurricanes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't write to us, too. We got to make sure we disclaim that.
We've said it a million times at this point. I don't care. We don't want to see people hurt. We don't want to see damage, but we're meteorologists and we love extreme weather. There. It's out there. Done. Leave us alone.
I love severe weather.
I do, too. I do, too. It's also the bane of our existence.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. As much as tropical systems are, as far as forecasting goes. But, yeah, just love it.
A lot of complexities to it. Trying to think back to even just my first fascination with severe weather. So when I grew up, I was terrified.
Same.
Terrified of storms. And I don't know what changed about that. I don't know if it was my mom was in the business, so going in and seeing, hey, like you can actually predict when this happens. Mm-hmm. That's cool. But I was terrified of tornadoes. I mean, glued to the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Severe thunderstorm warning. It didn't have to be a tornado warning. Severe thunderstorm warning, glued.
I think what changed it for me, my period of being scared of severe weather was pretty brief. But I quickly learned more about storms and weather. And when you learn more, you're not as scared.
Yeah.
And then, so I think, gosh, by the time I was probably 9 or 10, if there was thundering or lightning, I'm on the front porch.
They quickly turned to that for me. Yeah. The fascination of going to look at the clouds.
Yeah.
A lot of shelf clouds for us in Kentucky. Yeah. I always thought those were great. A lot of scud clouds. Yeah. Those were great as a kid. But yeah, there was a fascination that was there. And of course, you know, then you go on your storm chasing adventure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your storm chasing adventure.
Yeah.
Living off of Wi-Fi hotspots, as I like to call it.
You poor baby.
I know.
My first storm chasing adventure, there was no Wi-Fi. There was internet was kind of this new thing.
I didn't have the dial up. I didn't have the fancy technology of like a smartphone or anything back then. It was all flip phones or whatever. But we'd go to McDonald's and we'd look at radar.
Mm.
We're going to go here. Mm. And then we'd get to a McDonald's there. Well, let's look at radar again. So that's how I did it.
This is how I did it. Yeah, that looks pretty good. Let's go this way. That's how I did it.
No guidance at all.
Yeah, nope.
We talked about your radio trick.
Yeah.
Which I kind of think we should bring back in.
Yeah,
about how you kind of figured out where the storms were, which is so smart.
Yeah, radio trick, and it still works to this day. And I'll still occasionally use it if I'm in the car. It's kind of easier to do that while you're driving than it is to check the radar. So, turn your radio to AM.
Yep.
Go all the way down to the lowest station, which is usually, I think, 5:30, 5:40 a.m. It'll be a static station. There'll be a steady sort of quiet static. But every time there is a cloud-to-ground lightning strike, there will be a pop of louder static. And I would use that as a storm-chasing method. You know, I would sort of sit at home, wait for the weather on the 8s, see what the radar looked like. Like, okay, there's my storm. I would hit the road. I would go for it. Sometimes you could see it. Sometimes you couldn't. One of the telltale signs of the strength of a storm is how much lightning it has in it. So the whole time I'm chasing, I was listening to AM radio. And if that static was doing this, I knew my storm was still cranking. But if it started to go down and you started hearing less and less, I was like, okay, my storm's dying. I'm going to go home.
Let's turn it around.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was it. And that was it. That was the extent of it.
I think back to when I was younger, when you were younger, and that's kind of where I want to guide this episode. I don't care if you're 50, if you're 60 or 70 and watching this and listening. I don't care if you're 18. I think everyone could probably get something away from hopefully this episode.
Yeah.
in some capacity, because at the end of the day, you're probably a weather weenie watching this. Maybe this is called tips and tricks. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always tell people, don't overthink severe weather forecasting.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a common misconception now is everyone wants to get into all the intricacies of severe weather, and that doesn't matter if you don't have the basics.
Right.
The basics are where I would start. We have a graphic that you made, which I love, and it's the severe weather checklist.
Yeah.
Severe weather checklist of things you need, and I think that's a good starting point for us.
Because basically every event, as we're making our forecast every day or whatever, if we see a system, you know, a couple days out, like, okay, well, let's look at that. Mm-hmm. And there's just every severe weather event will have a couple of these sort of factors.
Yeah.
Some have all, some have half, some have two or three, you know, in the varying degrees. And, you know, there's a sort of a scale of each one of those. But, yeah, each severe weather setup has a certain amount of these factors.
Yeah. One of those, and we can kind of go down the list, that I think you certainly need, and we're limited a lot, but in spring we're not. Even summer we're not as well. Let's just start with storm fuel.
Storm fuel.
Storm fuel for a storm is something that is key. It's the ignition.
Yes.
It's like the engine for everything going. Too much of it can be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough of it.
You get nothing.
You get nothing.
So by this fuel, we basically mean sort of warm, humid air.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically it. And it's the gasoline that you're putting in your car.
Mm-hmm.
The more you have, the better your odds of severe weather. It's why you don't get severe thunderstorms when it's 45 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, you get them when it's warm. You get them when it's hot. You get them when it's humid. You got to have that fuel in the atmosphere, which is a big key.
If we want to really geek out here, if you go to that mesoanalysis page that we brought up last week.
On the Storm Prediction Center.
The Storm Prediction Center website, there is a mesoanalysis tab. A place where you can look for storm fuel when it comes to severe weather. You will find a thing called CAPE.
I love CAPE.
It's the greatest thing in the world. It is convective available potential energy. We measure this in a thing called joules per kilogram.
Yeah, joules per kilogram. It's a really good starting point for severe weather forecasting.
It is.
CAPE.
How much energy is going to be in the atmosphere? And if you look at the CAPE, there's a couple variations of it. And I always tell people, I always like to look at the mix level, which is ML CAPE on that thing, because that's like the absolute minimum.
Yeah.
Like, you can look at surface space, which we're not going to get into that. But if you just look at mixed level.
Yeah.
Hey, here's what it could look like on maybe the lowest setting.
Yeah.
And if those values are impressive, all right, we're going to mean business here. At least we're going to have the storm fuel for it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at the mesoanalysis page in my head right now and think about what else you could look at there.
CAPE is something that really gets into play for us in the summer.
Correct.
In the summer, because in the summer, most days our atmosphere is just full of fuel. When it's 94 degrees and it's ridiculously humid, that is all fuel. That alone doesn't mean you're going to get a thunderstorm.
No.
But it means if you get thunderstorms, there's a lot of juice and there's a lot of gas going into the engine on those summer days.
And I always say, too, when we're looking at severe weather, too much of one thing is usually bad, whether that be wind shear, whether that be storm fuel. CAPE is one of those things to an extent, because if you don't have something kind of limiting that storm fuel, it all takes off, and that's not really what you want in a severe weather setup.
Right.
So ideally, what I prefer in a severe weather setup.
when we want to see it really do its thing, the atmosphere.
If you can get a little bit of overnight morning light rain, just enough to come through, kind of put a little base of what we like to call cap, put a cap on the atmosphere, basically a lid.
Yeah.
And then get all of that to move out by 8, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
The key is then you need some sun to poke out. We actually build our energy through some sunshine.
Yep.
We call that diurnal heating. I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible. But if you can get something to kind of stabilize the atmosphere in the morning,
yep.
That way you don't have storms blowing up at 9 a.m., 10 a.m., right. 11 a.m. to ruin everything. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so much easier said than done, though.
It is.
And that's where a lot of my forecast busts come from.
It is, especially around here, because we've often said on days where severe weather is kind of our focus, okay, like the day before, I don't know how many times I've said this. Okay, tomorrow, if you see the sun coming out, in the back of your mind, you need to think it's going to be a big day.
Yeah.
If it stays cloudy all day, our severe weather threat is going down. Those are the hardest parts of forecasting severe weather. To predict, because a lot of times around here we have so much low-level moisture that we can get socked in with clouds.
Yeah.
And if those clouds don't break and if those clouds don't burn off and we don't get sunshine, we don't warm up, we don't have the fuel in the atmosphere to fuel storms, and that will kill a severe weather setup in a heartbeat.
And what's crazy about severe weather, and this is where I think a lot of the younger generation of meteorologists and weather weenies or whatever you want to call them really mess up, is they focus so much on model output days up into it. And that's fine. You could steer whatever model you want. We've talked about models on here before. But when it comes to the day of for a severe weather setup, you really need to be just looking at observations and seeing how the atmosphere is working. Of course, you can look at soundings and all that. I'm not going to touch on that today.
That's what we call now casting.
Correct.
What's happening right now.
And literally checking in on that every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Every hour.
All day long.
And that can tell you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the amount of times here where in my 5 years here, we've had the look, we've had the setup, maybe morning showers linger a little too long, which happens, and you'll start checking the nowcast stuff and you'll look and you look down in the low country and you're like, well, the dew points were in the 60s and 70s down there.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll transport up. And it never happens.
It always happens slower than models say it's going to happen.
Yes.
Always.
And usually that ruins our chance to where all the severe weather's down in Charleston and Savannah. Yeah. Not saying that we're hoping for that, but that's kind of our caveat right now when it comes to severe weather, is getting all that fuel to transport up to the north.
Yes. So then there's shear.
Yeah. And the second ingredient.
Wind shear. That can be two kinds of shear.
Mm-hmm.
Speed shear, speed shear is kind of what it sounds like. Lower levels, you have winds a little bit slower. Upper level of the atmosphere, they're going like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're hauling.
Yep.
What that does is literally creates, again, as we sort of a vacuum to get air to start rising.
Yep.
To get air to start rising. Then you have directional shear. Down here, wind's blowing this way. Up here, wind's blowing this way.
Yeah.
The example that I like to use to explain wind shear is, okay, you're at the bottom of a mountain, and you're trying to drive to the top. Are you going to go straight up the side of the mountain, which is a lot harder, or are you going to take the road that rotates its way around to get you to the top of the mountain? That's the much easier way. Wind shear like this, directional shear, gets that air going up like this.
Yeah.
And it starts to go up fast, and you have spin in the atmosphere.
What's really cool about that, too, is typically in a severe weather setup, as you go through, the winds are rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
If you can get sunshine, clear skies, even just a couple of cumulus clouds, like a cumulus field forming, look up. And watch those clouds.
Watch them. You can see wind shear in motion.
They are booking it. Yeah. And also, the clouds are twisting above you, which just... And these are just clear weather clouds. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we're set.
Yeah, we're doing it.
We need a storm. We're going to be good. And those are the days where you know everything's in place. There's also the caveat here, and really even in Kentucky, too much of one thing is not always... not always what you want. Like, you can have too much shear.
You can have too much shear... Literally to the point that as a thunderstorm is trying to develop and bubble up into the atmosphere, if the shear is too strong, that upper level wind literally cuts the top off of your storm.
It chokes it out.
It literally chokes it out. And so you'll end up with little showers. Sometimes they're rotating showers, which we've seen
that before.
We've seen that around here. They're showers that are rotating, but the shear is too strong to really get going. The wind literally cuts their heads right off.
we're diving into this, and yeah. I love it. So when it comes to the meso analysis, and I'm trying to think of everything we talk about, because I know there's going to be kids watching this, there's going to be weather enthusiasts watching this. I really want you to focus less on sheer values mm-hmm. and focus more on looking at levels of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think we do too much is we go to storm relative helicity values or mm-hmm. bulk shear, and we look, oh, mm-hmm. there's 40 meters square. Like, no. Here's what I would say. If you can look at surface maps and then look at upper level analysis. So mm-hmm. if you go into meso analysis, there's going to be upper level, I think it's called upper level maps. Yeah. It's on yeah. the top left. And there's going to be different levels. There's going to be 500 millibars, which is where planes mm-hmm. fly. There's going to be 700 millibars, 850. Look at that and turn the wind speed barbs on.
Mm-hmm.
What I will tell you is if you get into the habit of just checking that daily
mm-hmm.
and looking to see where the faster winds are,
mm-hmm.
look to the east, southeast side of a low,
yeah,
and then start looking at that area for Cape.
Mm-hmm.
And look how radar looks. Maybe go to future radar on yeah. a model and just watch that area.
Yeah.
Then for fun, go to the Storm Prediction Center site.
Yeah.
And see if there's an outlook
yeah,
for
see if
that.
There's an outlook there, yeah.
And then really read their discussion to mm-hmm. kind of get a better understanding of what's happening. That is personally how I got into forecasting. Mm-hmm. Because when you're growing up and you don't have all this, you don't know what the Euro is.
You're right.
You don't know how many times yeah. it comes out a day. You know yeah. what the ARRR is.
Right.
You know what the, or even the future radar on your phone. That's where I think, and we had a guy, not to bring him up, but Austin Carroll.
Yeah.
Fantastic student. I think he goes to Mississippi State, mm-hmm. and he said, hey, there's a lot of kids in my class that are so fascinated with all the technicalities. And mm-hmm. I said, listen, keep it simple.
Yeah. Big picture.
Look at the big picture. Mm-hmm. Where's weather going to happen? Circle that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Focus in on that area, and now look at all the little things,
yep.
but don't go too deep. And make a prediction.
Yeah.
Hey, is there severe weather potential here? And now go to the SPC yeah. and see if there is.
Yep.
And that's how you're going to get good yeah. at this.
You start big a few days out.
Yep.
And you gradually narrow down. You slowly, slowly, slowly narrow down.
And you'll get good enough to where you can start to realize and recognize when patterns are going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, hey, that system in Utah, yeah. in Ohio.
That has a look.
It's going to mean business.
Yeah, that has a look.
Oh.
Yeah.
It makes me happy. Tips and tricks, I guess. What other ingredients? Moisture,
which is kind of ties into fuel.
Yeah.
You need a spark. We talk about fuel. You need something mm-hmm. to spark that fuel.
Yeah.
That is some sort of force
mm-hmm.
in the atmosphere to get air moving,
mm-hmm.
especially moving up. Around here, that's a cold front.
Yeah.
That's a sea breeze. A couple of other small features. Just something to spark the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You can have all the fuel in the world,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't have anything to really get that air rising, not much is going to happen.
Yeah.
We have, I did want to touch on this because this is, our severe weather here is kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
We all think of spring as severe weather season,
mm-hmm.
and it certainly is. But spring is more of the severe weather season for kind of the bigger events.
Mm-hmm.
They don't happen a lot, but your ingredients for bigger severe weather locally start showing up in March, April, May.
Mm-hmm.
Then we transition into summer, which if you look at the numbers of just say severe thunderstorm warnings.
Yeah.
Our peak is in the summer.
Yeah.
Because we have so much fuel around here
mm-hmm.
that we get the daily thunderstorms. And if there's just a touch of wind shear in the summer, you're going to crank out severe thunderstorms.
Yeah.
So let's kind of break it down into our sort of two severe weather seasons that
like
we have here. In the winter,
yep.
we have what we always call and what has been called forever, high shear, low cape.
Mm.
Basically, that means the atmosphere is loaded with wind shear, but we don't have any fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you can have just enough shear to literally overpower the limits of having fuel in the atmosphere. Just literally call that the dynamics. Literally the dynamics of the atmosphere by itself will fire off thunderstorms.
Yeah.
That starts to happen around here, November, December, January, February, even kind of March.
We've even had rotating showers.
Rotating showers. Yeah, it's very common. A lot of our wintertime tornadoes have come from thunderstorms that aren't even producing thunder or lightning.
Yeah.
That is very classic high shear, low cape setup. In the summer, it's like we flip a switch. Usually late May and June, we flip a switch where we go to high cape, low shear. I call it a lot of times high cape, no shear.
Yeah.
Total opposite. The atmosphere is full of fuel. Like we said, that 95 degree day with a 75 degree dew point, the heat index 112, the atmosphere is just a pressure cooker, an absolute pressure cooker of energy. But we have zero wind shear.
And I would even say if you look up on those days,
you can,
instead of your clouds rotating, they're just going to build.
They're shooting straight up.
Straight
up as fast as they can go.
And they're going. Yeah. If you have an iPhone, I think Android has this too, but if you have an iPhone, I would. It's my favorite thing to do in the summer is if you turn on your time-lapse feature and just point it and put it on a tripod or on a bench and just let it go for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, and you'll see
and
how those.
And look at the clouds. Oh, it is. And they just bubble up.
Bubble up, yep.
There's no movement to them.
Yep.
And those are the ones that will put down some serious rain.
Crazy rain.
Even some hail.
Mm-hmm.
And man, if you can get the outflow.
Yeah.
A beautiful shelf cloud too.
Those thunderstorms. From a very high cape, low shear, they develop explosively. Those are some of my favorite days in the summer where you go from a cumulus cloud to literally 5 minutes later, this cloud is throwing out darts of lightning. Mm-hmm. It is dumping. These storms go up, and then they collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can happen in a matter of 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's typical summer for us. And as they collapse, you can get the strong winds. One of the more fun things to watch for in our summer setup like that is as they collapse, they create what's called an outflow boundary. Mm-hmm. That rain-cooled air kind of starts to spread out, and it acts like a miniature cold front. Yeah. And you can say, all right, this is where our next storm is going to form. As those outflow boundaries spread, storms start blowing up. And that process just kind of continues through the afternoon into the evening until you get to sunset. You start losing the fuel, the atmosphere cools down, and it's done.
We've had a lot of big summer days where I'm like 60% chance, and you're like, wow, it looks sunny. There's no way, and it's exactly that. The beauty of that is there's also, like we go back to it, there's a little bit of a cap, a little bit of a lid on the atmosphere, but when one takes off, the rest follow. And that, if you look at radar, that is the coolest thing to see when it comes to summertime.
Some of my favorite days over the summer, and this is old school weather forecasting. Y'all know I hate heat and humidity.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. Unless it's leading to storms.
Mm.
Once or twice a summer, we'll go maybe 7 or 8 days where it is blazing hot, insanely humid, but the atmosphere is capped and nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. And I was taught in college by an old school guy, if you get one little spark at the end of a stretch like that, it is going to go boom in a big way. It almost starts to build on itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that stretch. You get done with 5, 6, 7 days, and then you say, oh, there's a weak little blip coming through the atmosphere this day. And it blows. And those are the days where you're getting 1,000 lightning strikes every 15 minutes. You're getting 6 inches of rain in 2 hours. And it just blows up. Those are some of my favorite summer days.
One of those days recently, and if you were here, you vividly remember it.
July 4th.
I got tore up forecasting.
Yeah.
So I remember you sending a text. This was, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, July 4th looks like some storms. And I'm looking at everything, and I'm saying, okay, yeah, like a couple. And I remember that morning putting 40%. Like, okay, 40% coverage. Afternoon, we had the salute from the shore scheduled.
Yeah.
Everything's looking great. Hey, we'll have some scattered storms, but I think they're going to start late in the afternoon. Well, there was enough of a blip. There was a short wave, as we like to call it, that came through around 10-ish a.m.
Yes.
I got out of here at like 8 and went straight to the beach. I said, oh, I'm going to get about 4 hours for these storms to roll in. We had one storm take off. It was actually a pretty dry week. I remember heat, hot, humid, but not many storms. Let me tell you, when I busted that forecast, I mean, and you bumped it up, I think, because I think I had it at 20. Then you bumped it up to 40. And I probably could have looked. No model picked up on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably could have went, you know what? Like, that little shortwave is going to be coming through. I didn't know this rule at the time, so I put 40% in. We had a storm that blew, and I vividly remember it. A storm that blew up, what, Carolina Forest, Myrtle Beach? Like, right in that area.
That day, the first storm that day was North Myrtle Beach.
North Myrtle Beach.
It started North Myrtle Beach.
North Myrtle.
Yeah, about 10:30, 11 a.m. Yeah.
And I remember seeing it, and I remember looking at my phone and saying, there it is. Those poor people. I'm sitting at the state park. Within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It was pouring everywhere.
I call that the atmosphere unzipping.
It unzipped.
You get one that goes, and all it takes is that one. And once that one breaks the cap, as we call it,
there was no movement.
And they didn't move. And just insane, the lightning that day, that July 4th. I'll never forget the lightning.
No, I won't
insane
either.
Insane amounts of lightning, insane rain. We had, I think down at Burgess and Soxie, there were some spots down there with 10 inches of rain, 6 inches of rain in North Myrtle Beach. And that was a classic. That was all Cape. That was all Cape that day. And it was like it was about a week's worth.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere's got to do something. It's got to throw its temper tantrum and get it done.
I vividly remember, too, sitting underneath a pier with hundreds, and I mean hundreds, of people. Like, when's it going to pass? And I'm looking at radar. I'm like, it isn't. We're in trouble.
Those storms went all day. They went all day.
That was the worst 4th of July forecast we have had in a long time.
Funny thing about that same setup in the summer is if you have a day, let's say you got 3 days sort of lined up in the summer with storms, you'll throw in a 40% chance of storms each day. If your first day ends up overperforming, you will drain the atmosphere of a lot of that
I'm
fuel.
I'm so glad you said that.
And your next day, if we have a day where it overperforms, the first thing I'm doing is lowering my chances for the next day, because it takes a minute
to rebuild
for the atmosphere to literally recover. I always say it threw a temper tantrum yesterday. Yeah. It's got to take a little break.
Yeah.
It's got to take a little break. That's why you'll notice it's rare for us to have back-to-back days. It happens sometimes, big, big storms.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get a break, you'll have a quiet day, you'll get a big day, you'll get another quiet day. So that's always something I watch for.
That's
summer.
A really fun analogy, too. It's literally like recharging batteries. It's
you got to recharge.
There's no way it can do the same thing unless just conditions are right, which I absolutely love. So that was one of my forecasting busts. What about one of yours when it comes to severe weather or thunderstorms? Because
there's been so many. Because
when you live here, it's going to happen.
I don't remember a specific date. I know that we have a sort of rule of thumb around here.
I was going to bring that up.
That, you know, maybe once every other year we'll get a level 4 severe weather risk. We jokingly call it the kiss of death.
Yeah.
If we get a level 4, internally we're like, well, nothing's going to happen there. Because our past few level 4 days have been locally in this area have all busted. Because of either too much rain early in the day, the atmosphere wasn't quite as unstable, storms to our south sort of robbed some of the energy, or the energy was a little further north, so most of the severe weather was in North Carolina. And we've had, 5 of those?
Yeah, I've been here for at least 3.
Yeah, 5 or 6 of those?
One vividly I remember, and I'm going to bring it up, Brian Gibbons, our producer. For the 5? Four. This was at the time that I was doing that midday shift, early evening into like 7. And I remember we had declared a first alert weather day, as you have to. With the 4. Like, you can't be like, well, it's the kiss of death. Everything looked great. This was might have been the second one that I went through. And I just remember storms, the Charleston flooded downtown, just storm after storm. It robbed everything. But in the morning meetings and the afternoon meetings, hey, you know, things are looking pretty impressive. And about 4 o'clock, you and I remember this vividly. We're like, we need to tone it back.
Yeah.
We need to tone it back. Yeah. And I'll never forget, like, we were saying, hey, I think we're still going to get some storms with the severe weather threats coming down. And Brian texted me that night and said, and sent me a picture, and it was like, enjoyed a nice walk in my neighborhood. And it's it's pure sunshine. Yeah. Well, yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's been a few of those. And summer-wise, a lot of our biggest days are level 2 days.
Yeah, they are. And level 2 and 3. Yeah. We've had some big level 3 days here.
Yeah, yeah, level 2 days, you know. Those can tend to be big around here. They're not big in terms of sort of the intensity. Yeah, we get really nasty storms, but just sort of a lot of them. Well, yeah. You know, a lot of 60-mile-per-hour wind gusts, a lot of, you know, hail that's maybe quarter size, you know. Those are equally as important days.
Yeah.
A lot of times around here in the summer, we get those on a level 1, you know, which is basically almost every day in the summer we're under sort of a level one at risk, at least.
It usually comes in the summertime, too, to where I'll stop showing a level 1 risk because it's every day.
Yeah.
In the winter or something cool, hey, there's something out there we'll need to watch. But, man, it will humble you quick. Any last-second maybe tips or tricks you have for people who want to get into severe weather forecasting? Honestly, even on the quiet days, the Storm Prediction Center does an outlook for day, even if there's not a day 4 through 5 or day 4 through 7, read those.
Mm-hmm. Read the discussions. If it's a day, read this. Start with the Storm Prediction Center. Yeah. Read their discussions for day 1, day 2, day 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, let's say they're forecasting severe thunderstorms around Oklahoma City or around St. Louis. Read those forecast discussions. Then go to the National Weather Service office.
In those areas.
Read their forecast discussions. And the great thing that the Weather Service does in their forecast discussions is if they use sort of inside baseball terminology, each one of those terms has a link. You click on that. If you don't know what they're talking about, if they, you know, 500 millibar vorticity, click on it, and it's going to tell you what that is.
It'll take you straight to it.
Yeah.
Cape, diagrams, all of it.
Cape, click on it, takes you right to it. And it's just an amazing way to learn. I started reading discussions when I first started college.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, it's still the first thing I do every morning is I will read our local forecast discussion. And if there is something stormy looking, I'll go to the Storm Prediction Center and read those. That's my morning routine with my cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also would say read them multiple times because they do updates. It'll be like at the top, it'll say update.
Yeah.
What's changed. And then that way, if you're not into models or anything like that, you still know what's happening in the atmosphere and what they're looking at. So I would highly, did I tell you I had to write an AFD once? It was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was summertime. I interned with the AFD, National
Weather Area Forecast Discussion.
Correct. Sorry, I forgot that we're nerding out. But I interned with the National Weather Service in Louisville. I quickly learned that I could not work for the National Weather Service just because I can't sit at a desk.
Yeah, that's hard.
And look at what they like. Kudos to them.
Yeah.
Not to mention those people change their shifts every 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah.
Kudos.
Crazy.
They're amazing. But I got to write one on my final day of my internship and put ACD at the bottom, my initials.
Yep.
And I still have that at home. Tours like I've done that, so really cool stuff. I guess we should do some shooting the breeze.
Let's do it.
I think there's a couple more severe weather in there, so that'd be great. Right. Hopefully Texas is treating you well.
Yeah, it's great. Deep in the heart of Texas, I'm gonna have to do this. I'm gonna have to put this back. It's the defamation ban question. Oh, do we have time for defamation?
No, right now. That was Kevin, right?
Kevin,
we got you.
I know exactly what you're talking about. You got a lot of snow from a defamation ban, and we'll eventually get into defamation bans. We may have to build some graphics for defamation ban because
I thought we might have to build some graphics today. We will for sure have to build some graphics.
Defamation
there.
Bans are big. Straight line winds versus tornado damage. How do they determine this? David via Facebook.
Matty B did a really good.
He did.
In-depth package, and I'm sure you could find that. So basically, let's start with storm surveys. Mm-hmm. So after severe weather happens, you can even from a video, you cannot tell,
no,
hey, this is the strength of a tornado, or hey, this damage was from, like, we have to send surveyors out. The National Weather Service mm-hmm. has to. I always tell people the direction of damage is typically how this is indicated. That's mm-hmm. the easiest way to look through. So just because a building is sent down or a shed is tipped over, that never, unless you have video confirmation of a tornado, never says there was a tornado. What they are great at is the National Weather Service will go out there and they will assess the damage based off radar scans.
Mm-hmm.
That damage, if it's a tornado, will be usually directional in the way a tornado spins. So
yes.
Think of a group of trees, and I think this is kind of what Maddie B did. Straight line wind damage, all those trees and all your damage is typically going to be tilted one way.
They're all of the trees have fallen generally in the same direction.
Correct.
Yeah.
Where a tornado, you will actually have damage that looks like it was either twisted or if the trees were fallen, they're going to be fallen in different ways of that circulation.
And
so you may have trees looking like that.
Yeah. And one of the easiest ways is again, through the trees. You can usually find at least in a small tornado around here, you can usually find sort of the midpoint of yeah. that tornado if it happened to go through a grove of trees or go through a forest where your trees cross.
Yeah.
You kind of follow the X's in the trees, and that's going to roughly approximate the center line of that tornado, sort
yeah.
of the absolute center of spin, because as a tornado is approaching, your trees are falling this way.
Yep.
Because remember, we're talking about rotation. They're going to fall this way. As the tornado is leaving on the backside, they're going to start falling this way, and
Bingo.
They'll start crossing over each other as it goes through that through the woods.
And really, that's it. I mean,
yeah.
as far as damage of tornado goes, we touched on that last episode, but they'll look at the structural damage or, mm-hmm. or trees and, hey, how strong did this look? But straight line versus tornado, it's all the direction of the damage.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people, and this happens around here a lot, will see a tree that gets blown over in a thunderstorm, and it does have kind of a – it'll have a twist look to it. Yes, you can get that in a tornado, but a lot of times – as a tree, especially around here, pine trees,
mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to pop, they
yep.
snap. It's not the wind that's making that sort of twist. It's more of the mechanics of the tree. As it's snapping and falling, it may turn just a little bit. So you can't use that alone.
Yeah.
So if you see a twisted, leave it to the experts.
Yeah.
Leave it to the experts.
I've been on, and I know you have too, damage surveys. It's
yeah.
amazing what they can look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, yeah, if it's big enough, okay, cool. But like, even like EF0 damage.
Yeah, yeah, which can be hard to
wow.
kind of hard to pick out. And they're literally looking at, you know, where leaf debris is on the side of a building.
It's
if
crazy.
It's, you know, are there leaves that are stuck to this side of the building or, you know, which way did that fence panel go?
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of backtracking. Okay, well, here's a piece of sheet metal.
Yeah.
Where did it come from?
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of sort of backward surveying.
And then once they determine the tornado damage, then they have to figure out, okay, if this is tornado damage, where did it touch down?
Mm-hmm.
And then how far did it go and where did it lift? And I remember that mm-hmm. a lot with our recent one,
mm-hmm.
With the Sockasee tornado. We had all that damage in River Oaks, which was determined straight line wind.
Which was determined as straight line, yeah.
Which that place looked like
yeah, it was horrible.
War
yeah.
zone.
Yeah, and around here, it is common to get straight line wind damage that easily looks
Bingo.
At first glance like a tornado. But
yeah.
just because you have a bunch of trees blown down doesn't mean it's a tornado.
Yeah, so that's
it's way more common for us to get straight line wind
damage.
That's
a good way to think about it, too, because I remember we thought that tornado at least went over 501.
Mm-hmm. But nope.
When in reality, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was all straight line. Oh, boy.
We already answered this one.
Why are you putting them back in the box?
I don't know. Remember the next shot of cold Arctic air?
Oh, yeah, we have
from Rosa.
That one.
All right, we got one more in here. We answered this, right? Yeah, okay.
Did I put deformation band back in there?
No, it's this one.
Okay. We're getting to you, Kevin.
This is a good one to end on.
Yeah, okay.
And it's perfect for you.
Okay.
How do shelf clouds form?
My favorite.
Yeah, I know, right?
My favorite.
This is from Margaret. Margaret, thank you, too.
Margaret, yeah, and we get beautiful shelf clouds here. Oh, we just get the most beautiful shelf clouds, as most coastal locations in the South tend to do. It's pretty simple. You get, in the summer, you get a big thunderstorm that develops. the rain starts to come out and fall. And as it does, it brings cool air with it. Well, as that cool air hits the ground, it can't keep going. It doesn't just stop. It hits the ground, and it begins to spread out. So ahead of these thunderstorms, you will get rain coming down, cool air. It blows out. And as that almost cold front, it's like a miniature cold front, as it's moving along and spreading out, you get a cloud that forms along it. Because as that cool air is moving along, it's pushing warm air up. And especially around here in the summer when it's super humid, it's warm and insanely humid air full of moisture, and it starts to ride up and over that push, and you can get these the beautiful sculpted bizarre looking shelf clouds. It's kind of as simple as that.
It is.
It's as simple as that. Cold air phew, going out, it's pushing air up ahead of it. And that's why most shelf clouds almost tend to have a, they're called a shelf, because it's sort of a, if you're looking at the shelf cloud approaching you, it looks like it's sort of tilted back. Yeah. That's that cool air, and it's pushing that warm air up, and you're forming the shelf cloud.
And that's when you
shelfie season.
Shelfie watch. Shelfie watch, warning.
Shelfie warning, and a shelfie selfie.
Shelfie selfie.
Yeah.
A shelfie.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that season. That's fun. Yeah. Those photos that we get from people.
Yeah. Shelf clouds will always get people taking pictures, and a lot of times they look terrifying. Oh. Like you get a nasty shelf cloud coming. You think this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it rains 10 minutes and rumbles a thunder twice. They can tend to look really, really scary, but they don't have to be. They don't always mean severe weather.
Yeah. And to typically wait and feel the rush of cool air.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh. Yeah. That's the best part about a shelf cloud is this, as it's blowing over on that 95 degree day in August, it'll drop down to 75 and the wind blows. And you're like, oh, a break.
It takes me back to the days where I would storm chase, and I'd be like, oh, we did it. Yeah. We made it. We caught it.
Yep.
And now we get those all the time, which is really cool there. I think that's it for severe weather.
I think that's enough. We covered a lot of big stuff. We hit them with cape and shear and directional shear and meters per second and joules per kilogram.
And I want to make sure that we say this too, because I know someone's going to ask it. I didn't want to touch anything on tornadoes.
No.
Because I think sometimes that that fuels like the, hey, we're going to look at everything else and then miss the fundamentals.
Yeah.
Like, hey, where's a tornado going to happen? Yeah. You got to get the basics down when it comes to severe weather.
Start big.
And explore. And if you want to learn, I'm sure after those discussions, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Next week.
Do we start with the eclipse or do we start with the hurricanes?
I don't know.
Or maybe we could combine them into both.
It'd be a long episode. One. That would be a big episode. But I think that would probably be the best episode. That would be a biggie.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's a recap, and then maybe we dive into a little bit more of a breakout hurricane.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, like a recap of how that went, and then, hey, next week we're going to really dive into the changes you'll see, and also maybe the forecast as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does it for us. Yeah. Episode 45.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to join you from Texas.
Howdy, partner.
Let's see. At this point, I'm leaving for Austin tomorrow morning from South Padre Island. Going to Austin for the eclipse.
Yeah, that would be right.
Yep.
At this point, too, technically, we would already know what the forecast was.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have that next week.
Yeah, well, the exclusive.
That does it for us. We'll see you all. Thanks for tuning in.